Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Crime Hour. It's been a long 2 weeks, but you know what? I'm back and I can't wait to share this case with you. Just letting you know a heads up though, this does contain graphic descriptions, children, and there are a lot of names in this case, so bear with me. This case is actually really well known. It's been documented in lots of different documentaries. I believe there was like a movie about it, or like it was tied in with like a show. And Dr. Phil has actually had interviews with one of the people involved in this case. But before we start, again, I would like to say thank you to everybody who supports me and followed me throughout this journey. It's been a long journey. And thank you for everybody for just sharing and doing what they can to get the word out about the Crime Hour. Again, if you would like to check it out on Patreon and get the content earlier than Sunday, then, you know, go to www.patreon.com/thecrimehour. For only $3 a month, you can get early access. Today, I'm going to be talking about the horrific, the torturous, brutal murder of Shanda Scherer. Shanda Renee Scherer was born on June 6, 1979 in Kentucky, USA. At a young age, her parents, Stephen and Jacqueline, got divorced. Shanda and her mother moved to Louisville, where her mother remarried, but Shanda would still see her father on the weekends. Growing up, Shanda was very energetic, athletic, and really in any sports, like anything that would come up in school, after school opportunities, like recreation centers that had like signups for like soccer, baseball, basketball, anything at all, you name it, she's the first one to sign up. At school, she was actually on the cheerleading, softball, and volleyball team. Outside of school, she did baseball, basketball, and gymnastics, which is like, I don't even know where she even has the time to do any of that outside of school, because I know like all the sports that she's doing in school must have like a bunch of practices and like games and stuff. And I don't understand how she can be on cheerleading and softball and volleyball, like maybe because they don't really have cheer squad compared to basketball and soccer and stuff. I don't really know how that works. Never was on a sports team or cheerleading, but I always thought, if you're on the cheerleading, you can't really play a sport because you have to be there to cheer. But I guess she did both. I don't know how she has time for anything else, but she juggled it. In June of 1991, her mother and stepfather got divorced. Her mother and her then moved to Indiana, where Shanda would go to attend Hazelwood Middle School. And the first couple days of school was great. She was fitting in, she was, you know, joining clubs, sports, and she was just like doing really well with the new arrangement. But by the third day, Shanda was talking to a new friend who informed her that she had just broken up with her boyfriend and still had something that belonged to him, but she didn't have the guts to go and return it. So Shanda thought, hey, I'm going to be a good friend and I'm going to offer help. So she says, hey, let me take it to him. I know it's difficult for you, but let me do it. I don't mind. So Shanda takes the item and brings it to the boy and explains the situation. Now, this guy was very furious because he's like, what the fuck? Why couldn't she do it herself? Like, this has nothing to do with you. Why are you getting involved? Kind of thing. And so he starts yelling at her and was like, he was just getting really frustrated and taking it out on her when she was just trying to help. And just as he was doing that, his 14-year-old cousin, Amanda Hervin, was walking by and she saw and she was like, what the fuck? Why is, like, my cousin getting involved with somebody like her kind of thing? Like, I'm going to step in. So then Amanda steps in and was like, hey, yelling at Shanda and was like, you can't be involved. Like, why are you trying to stick your nose in other people's business? Amanda then shoves her against the wall and she starts screaming at her until a teacher came and broke the two apart. And those two then and end up in detention for 2 weeks. And in detention, you know, if you don't go to detention, you don't know anybody, right? And really, what are you going to do in detention? Nothing, right? Unless you probably have homework or something. So the two girls had nothing to do. So, and they didn't know anybody else, so they started to get to know each other. And then they eventually become friends, and they start hanging outside of school. Honestly, it's crazy how the world works, because I don't think I would ever be able to be friends with somebody who landed me in detention for something that I didn't do. Like, if she was the one who was yelling at me and I didn't do anything about it, but I still landed in detention, like, I don't think I would be talking to that person ever. Now, Jacqueline, Shanda's mother, was like, what the fuck? Like, no, I don't like this idea. I don't want you to be friends with her because she has a bad rep, I think, because she's the one who landed you in detention. She beat you up kind of thing. Like, she bullied you, right, basically. So I don't like her. But Shanda goes, trust me, she's fine. Amanda's a really great person once you get to know her. Like, she gives off the, like, intimidating, like, I don't give a fuck type of vibe. But once you get to know her, she's actually really, like, heartwarming and really kind. So, you know, like every parent, her mom just wanted her to be happy. So she's like, okay, fine. If you like her and whatever, then okay. If you're happy, then I'll let you be. Now, Amanda tells Shanda how she was in an on-again and off-again relationship with this girl that the 16-year-old girl named Melinda Lovelace. And they've been together for about 2 years. And again, it was just on and off. Now, Melinda had a very hectic home life. She had disapproving parents, multiple mental illnesses that she was diagnosed of. And Melinda's father, Larry, was abusive to Melinda's mother, Marjorie, and towards her and her two sisters. He would sexually and physically abuse his daughters, and he would tie them up and rape them. Like, what the fuck? And I don't understand the mom. Like, if you know this is happening, why are you not getting divorced? Why are you not taking your kids out of there and been like, no, fuck you, we're gone? Melinda and her sisters would actually go unfed a lot because whenever Larry got paid, he would just spend it on alcohol, cars, and firearms. Like, he didn't really care about the well-being of his daughters. Like, to him, it was just like, oh, look, I have daughters. More people I could be, like, sexually intimate, like, yeah, you know, like, intimate with, which is really gross. Like, don't do that. Melinda's sisters would actually go on and say that they hated their father for what he did to them, which I don't blame them. I would hate my father too if he did that. And the two would get more punished than Melinda because they would always fight back and, you know, refuse it and, you know, doing the regular stuff. Like, if you know something's not supposed to be done, fight, right? Like, don't let it happen. But Melinda, because she was the baby of the family, she was like, oh, you know, she adored her dad. She was like, oh my God, yeah, I'm a daddy's girl, right? Like, whatever dad says goes. So she never argued back. If he wanted something, she got it. And that's why she didn't get as much punishment, because she basically just let it happen. Now, Larry had this weird fascination, but he was also had this jealousy thing. Like, it was his fascination, but also he would get jealous. But the thing was, he wanted his wife, Marjorie, to have sex with others while he watched. Which, I don't know. Like, why would you have that fascination if you know that you're going to be a jealous type about it? But he wanted her to do this. So he would do, like, you know, like, he would find people to do this, like, carry out his fascination, okay? And she found it repulsive, like, disgusting. And every single time it happened, she would try to commit suicide after, because she was so disgusted with herself. One time he actually forced her to be shared between his coworkers, and they gang raped her. To the point where, like, immediately right after, she tried committing suicide. She tried to drown herself. She tried to cut, like, anything that she thought she could do to, like, be free from this. So after this incident, she actually refused sex for months. She would avoid Larry, and she wouldn't, you know, like, go through with it. She was so disgusted, and she was like, I'm never doing this again. Like, you don't deserve this, you know? So, Larry, being frustrated, and because of all this, he started to see her as repulsive, and started to hate her because she wasn't giving him what he wanted, and she was standing up for herself. So he decides the best way to solve this issue was, he decides to rape her as his daughters were, like, overhearing from the other side of the door, basically, because I guess, like, the walls are really thin in the house and whatever. So, like, they were literally, like, next door, and he raped their mother, and the girls just listened to it happen. Okay, so obviously we can tell that, like, Melinda's life, her home life, her father is very fucked up in the head. He shouldn't be charged for rape and everything else that you can think of. Like, they should report him. That is not right. You don't rape. No means no. So when Melinda was 5 years old, the family actually got heavily influenced by church. I don't even know how this even happened, okay? It went from him having fascinations and always wanting sex and gang raping and whatever to going to church. Like, it was just like a flip like that. And so they would go to church, and they would be involved, like, heavily. Like, they would volunteer, they would do stuff outside of church for church. And Larry would be really strict, and he would tell the kids, okay, you have to dress this way now because it's a sin for, you know, girls to be doing this, and it's a sin, so we cannot be drinking anymore. Like, him and Marjorie cannot be drinking. They cannot have people over drinking. Sex is a no-no. And any fascination like that, no, we cannot have that because we are now Christians and going to church and following whatever the Bible says. But at a very young age, Melinda knew that she was not into boys, she was into girls. So the church community, whatever, took Melinda and had her exercised by a 50-year-old man in a hotel room. Melinda states that she does not remember what the fuck happened in that hotel room. She just remembered going and being scared out of her mind because she's in there with some stranger, this 50-year-old man that she doesn't know, and she blacked out. She completely blacked out. She doesn't know what happened. She woke up and she was like, I was just in the bed. I don't know what happened. Which is disgusting. She was 5. You know, not good things are running through my mind when I hear that. Because it's like, what the fuck is a 5-year-old doing with a 50-year-old man in a hotel room? She didn't remember one thing, not one, except for the fact that she was there and that she woke up in the bed. Still involved with the church, Larry becomes a marriage counselor and would be very forward with women. And eventually he actually tried to rape one of them. Oh, okay, so we're not going to follow the Bible now and we're just going to sin at church. So he tries raping one of them, and that's what caused the family to be kicked out of church completely. Like, they were banned from going to this church. And so Larry goes, okay, church life is over. We can go back to our regular ways. And so he continues doing what he was doing before going to church. The drinking, the whole sex craze thing. When Melinda was 14, her parents got divorced after Marjorie caught Larry peeking at Melinda and a friend. She attacked him with a knife, and when he fought back, it actually caused him to go to the hospital because he hurt his hand with the knife. And this left Melinda, like, she was devastated because her father was leaving, and remember, she saw her dad as, like, a hero, like, he was everything. So she starts to act out, skip school, and got into fights. She was then diagnosed with depression. So that's a little insight of Melinda Lovelace's life. She had a crazy life as a kid. And yeah, so she was diagnosed with depression because she just started acting out. She was upset that her father was gone. And when her father first left, he actually was writing letters to her. But then he remarried and had a new family. And although he still continued to write letters, eventually he stopped. And so she stopped hearing from him. And that's what broke her. See, I get it because, like, okay, yeah, your dad left and, you know, you were probably really, like, kids are supposed to look up to their parents. But after what he did, it's like, how? Wouldn't you be glad that he left? Because then he can't do those things to you. I don't know how she saw him as a hero. I don't know how she, like, looked up to him. But I don't know. I could never, with somebody like that and knowing that they're just that disgusting, I don't know. I just don't get it. So during this on and off with Amanda and stuff, Amanda was like, okay, we're like off again. So I'm over it. So Amanda actually starts falling for Shanda, and the two of them start getting together. Although Shanda was 12 years old, so she didn't really understand what was happening. She was 12, Amanda was 14, and she didn't really understand because at 12 years old, she was still kind of like, I don't really know if I'm straight, like not like gay, lesbian, whatever. She didn't know which category she was actually in because she was still curious. She was 12. She hasn't even hit like puberty. And she didn't know what she was doing sexually because, again, she was 12. But Amanda knew this, and so she took advantage of her, basically, because she was like, oh, that's okay. Like, I could show you. It'll be fine. You know, like, I will never hurt you. And the two of them would start sending each other letters. So Amanda would start writing letters to Shanda asking, like, do you think I'm pretty? Like, do you think I'm pretty enough, though? And then, like, you know, like, the whole I love yous and the whole honeymoon phase, you know? Which, like, okay, yeah, it's cute that, like, that's the way that they were able to communicate with each other outside of school and when they're not hanging out, like, writing each other letters. Because it was the 90s. There was no text messages and stuff like that. So that's what they did. And they would just send each other letters. October 1991, Amanda asked Shanna to be her date to the school dance. Things at the dance were going great until Melinda saw Shanna getting close with Amanda and threatened her, saying, "Stay away from Amanda or I'm going to kill you. There will be consequences." But Shanna brushed it off because she was like, "I'm not scared of her. Like, what is she going to do, right? Like, yeah, like, it's not her relationship. She has no say. You know, we're not even friends." Which I don't really understand the school, because Shanna is 12, Amanda's 14, but Melinda is 16. So, like, is this school just, like, I don't know, like, middle school throughout high school? I've never met a school like that, but, like, is it just, I don't know how it is in the States. I don't understand. Like, how do you have a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old going to the same school dance? So, Shanna continues her relationship with Amanda, but her family starts seeing a change in her. She starts to skip classes. She failed all her classes. Amanda actually taught her how to forge her mother's signature so that her mother would never see her bad grades or her report cards. And Jacqueline hated this. She hated the fact that, you know, she was failing. She was just not being herself. So Jacqueline tried to stop Shanna from seeing Amanda, but the girls just started seeing each other behind her back. One day, Jacqueline found a letter addressed to Amanda that Shanna had written, but it got sent back because she used old stamps, and so it got sent back to them, and that's how Jacqueline found out that they were still seeing each other behind her back. So Jacqueline then decides that she will move Shanna to a new school. Okay, I get that the mom wants what's best for her daughter, but, like, I feel like moving her to a new school, I don't know, maybe that would work if it was far enough, but at the same time, it's like, that doesn't stop the letters, right? Because you're sending letters. It's not like you're moving away and you have to change your phone number or something. Also, I find it really extreme. Like, wouldn't it be like, you know, like, you ground her, you tell her, like, "Hey, listen, if you don't get your grades up, you'll be getting this taken away," or, like, "If you don't get your grades up, this is gonna happen. Like, I'm gonna send you to live with your father," or something, right? She just sent her to a new school, and she was like, no, "I'm gonna send you to a new school, you're gonna make new friends, and, yeah, you're gonna forget about her." So Shanna goes to this new school, and once there, Shanna tried out for cheerleading, and she starts to fit in again. Her new life was actually getting really busy with all her sports and school, and she was just juggling so much that, like, she didn't have time for anything. Amanda would, like, she didn't give up. She called her every day, and she still sent letters, but eventually Shanna would stop replying. She wouldn't pick up the phone. She wouldn't send her any letters back. And Amanda was like, "I'm not giving up. This is, like, I love her. I'm going to keep trying." So Shanna, she was getting really fed up with the fact that Amanda kept calling and sending letters. Like, it was getting a kind of, like, an obsession. So Shanna actually told one of her old friends from that school that Amanda was at, that she wished that Amanda would just leave her alone. Which is really sad, because, like, you started this whole thing with this girl, and it's not like you can not see her, right? You can still send her letters and stuff, and I get that you get busy, but you could always write that in your letters, or, like, answer the phone and tell her, like, "Hey, listen, I'm busy because this is what I have going on. Like, this is a schedule. Like, you know, I have cheerleading this day," and, like, whatever sport that she does, right? And I don't know. I just feel like that's so mean, because, like, you're just going to stop talking to her. Like, you liked her. You guys were going out. Like, you didn't even break up, per se. You just stopped talking. Like, you ghosted her. So, before I get into the next part, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that this is the part where there's going to be a lot more names. So, again, bear with me. I'm trying my best to explain it the way that is easier, because again, lots of names and graphic descriptions are coming up, so heads up. January 10th, 1992, Melinda had a plan to scare Shonda with a knife because she was still so furious about that, about Shonda and Amanda being together, that she just needed a way. Like, she had to plan out a way to scare her enough to get Shonda to just stop. Like, stop talking to Amanda. Like, totally ghost her. So she plans an evening with her friend Lori, who was 17 at the time. Lori invites her two friends, Tony and Hope, who were both 15 at the time. Now, all four of these girls had a troubled past with abuse, self-harm, and depression or other mental illnesses. Also, before this night on January 10th, Tony and Hope had never even met Melinda. Like, they just met her off of Lori. And they believed that they were going to go to a punk rock concert that night with them. Which, honestly, I don't know where you're going to find, like, a way to even go to a concert last minute, like, especially like a rock concert or a punk rock concert. Like, how? Unless it's like one of those like small concerts that plays at like I don't want to say restaurants, but like, you know, like they do like gigs at like bars and stuff, right? Like, unless it's like that. But if it's like a huge concert, like, you're not gonna get tickets for that. Like, how are you gonna get there? How are you going to get in? Like, where do you just score tickets out of nowhere? So Lori, because she's 17, she has her own car. So she goes and picks up Hope and Tony. Then she heads to Melinda. Once at Melinda's house, the girls are borrowing Melinda's clothes. I don't know why. And so, like, I don't understand. If you're going to a concert, why are you borrowing somebody's clothes, right? And how did they, like, they all must be really skinny, or Melinda just wears baggier clothes. Because, like, imagine being the same size as your friend. Like, all four of them were the same size. Melinda then shows them a knife. And she tells them that she wants to scare a little girl tonight. And that she also wants to kill her. But her plan was to just scare her. So the girls then left Melinda's house and gets into Lori's car. And they drive to Shonda's dad's house, where she was staying for the weekend in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And once there, Lori tells Tony and Hope to go get Shonda. And tell her to come out, and that Amanda was in the car waiting for her. Because that was their like, bait, right? Like, they had to lure her out because they don't know her and she doesn't know them. So this night, Lori and Tony and Hope, it was their first time meeting Shonda. Like, they don't even know who she is. They just knew she was a girl, a little girl, which I would be questioning so much as a 17-year-old hanging out with my friends. I'd be like, why the hell are we going to a 12-year-old's house? And why are we, like, trying to scare this 12-year-old? Like, I would have so many questions. I'd be like, how do you even know this 12-year-old? Why are we going to her house? And what makes you think she's allowed to come out? She's 12. So the two ring the doorbell, and Shonda comes to the door, but she explained that she couldn't come out because it was late and her dad wouldn't let her. But then she tells them, come back at midnight, and when he's asleep, I will sneak out. So the girls return at midnight, and at this point, Shanda was debating if she wanted to go, because she's like, maybe I shouldn't do it, because, you know, I already gotten shit for, like, bad grades and stuff, and I already got sent to a new school, like, you know, like, she was debating, right, because she's 12, she's like, I don't even know these girls, maybe I shouldn't go. But the girls insisted that she comes, and that Amanda was waiting for her at the witch's castle, which is also known as Mistletoe Falls, and it's a ruined stone house located on an isolated hill overlooking the Ohio River. So Shanda agrees and she gets changed. Hope even helped her pick out an outfit, okay? And so they get in the car and Hope is questioning her about her relationship with Amanda. Like, how do you know her? Are you guys really good friends? Blah, blah, blah. That's when Melinda, who was hiding in the back seat with a blanket over her, jumped out and put a knife to Shanda's throat and asked her about the sexual relationship with Amanda. And during this whole ride, she has the knife to her throat and Lori is telling the girl an urban legend about the witch's castle and how it was once owned by 9 witches and the townspeople burned it down to get rid of them. And that's why it's called the Witch's Castle. First off, I want to know, like, is she driving a van? Is that why she didn't see Melinda? Because I'd be like, even if you use a blanket to cover yourself in the back seat, I'd still be like, okay, you can tell that somebody's back there. Because, like, how are you going to tell me a whole person is lying back there and you don't notice when you get in the car, right? Like, unless they were in the trunk, but no, she was in the back seat. So I'm guessing she drives a van. And second of all, why, out of all things, you would be talking about a urban legend in this place? I don't know. And third of all, why didn't Shanda just fight her back? Like, yeah, they were in the car, but, like, why didn't she fight her off when she had a knife to her throat? Like, I don't understand that. So at this point, knife to her throat, Shanda is crying and begging them to take her home, because she's like, okay, no, I don't want to do this anymore, but just take me home. She tells them that she's sorry for getting involved with Amanda, and the girls take her into this castle and they bound her arms and legs. And then Melinda said, oh, you have such beautiful hair. It'd be a shame if somebody were to cut it all off. Maybe you wouldn't be as pretty then. Then, because Shanda's all, like, tied up, she starts taking off the rings off Shanda's fingers, and she's giving it to the girls, right? And Hope takes Shanda's Mickey Mouse watch. Again, Shanda is 12, and this is what she's going through. Oh, also, during this time, it's just Shanda, who's tied up, Melinda, Lori, and Hope that are really, like, doing this to her at Witch's Castle. Tony is actually in the car because she doesn't want to be involved. Lori then gets a smiley face shirt from the car and says, the witch's castle is filled with human remains. Yours will be next. And she proceeds to burn the shirt. I don't know what the purpose of that was. Like, okay, you just ruined... a shirt. But alright, girl. But this scares Shanda because she's like, holy shit. Like, these girls are serious. Like, they tied me up, right? Like, what the fuck? And she's 12, so she's terrified. So she's like, I want to go home. I just want to go home. And so she's crying and begging them to stop. But then, after Lori burns the shirt, she was scared that somebody would see the flames and they would be it would catch somebody's attention driving by. So the girls dragged Shanda back to the car and they got in and drove off. Honestly, these are like high school girls torturing a kid. This is dark, okay? Like, this should not happen. This is beyond bullying. And I don't care if the four girls had a troubled past. That's not okay. Just because, you know, they went through something bad doesn't make it okay for them to hurt others, you know? Like, yeah, what they went through was bad. The abuse, the sexual abuse, rape, and whatnot, terrible, horrible things. Shouldn't happen to anybody. But them hurting a 12-year-old doesn't make it right. And also, I want to know, what the fuck is Tony doing? She's in the car. Everybody else is torturing her. Like, at no point does she decide, okay, I'm going to run and get help. Like, or I'm just going to drive off in the car and go get help. Like, why? Why does she just sit there? So, they're in the car, and Shanna continued to beg them to take her home. That's when Melinda tells Shanna to take off her bra and give it to Hope. So, Hope takes the bra, slips off her own bra, and puts Shanna's bra on, which is disgusting, by the way. Sanitary reasons, okay? And, like, why would you do that? Are you even, like, is she even the same size? Like, breast cup-wise? Like, I don't understand that. What was the point of that? And while she's doing this, she's also driving the car. So you have a 15-year-old driving a car now, because Lori's in the back with Melinda and trying to keep Shanda, like, I guess, like, from fighting back. The girls end up driving to a place by the edge of the woods near Lori's house. Lori then leads them to a garbage dump near the near this forest area, and Tony and Hope stay in the car, while Melinda and Lori drag Shanda out of the car, stripped her naked, and Melinda starts to beat her with her fist. Like, she just starts beating Shanda with her fist, and then she slams Shanda's face into her knee, and Shanda's wearing braces, so it starts cutting her lip, and so she's bleeding everywhere, and she's just smashing her knee into her face, okay? And this is happening multiple times, and again, Hope and Tony are in the car. None of them decide to go get help. None. Melinda then tried to slash Shanda's throat, but the knife was too dull. So Hope then gets out of the car, and she holds Shanda down, while Lori and Melinda are now stabbing her multiple times in the chest with that said knife, because it was too dull. Like, the blade side was too dull to, like, slit her throat. So the point of the knife, they were just, like, stabbing her with it. And again, at no point at any of this time does Tony decide, I'm gonna go get help. This is not okay. She just sat there. Hope returns to the car, and Lori takes a rope and starts to strangle Shanda until she goes unconscious. Then her and Melinda picked up her body and put her in the trunk, and they get into the car, where Lori tells Hope and Tony that Shanda is now dead. The girls return to Lori's house, where they got cleaned up and started to drink soda. Like they just went out and, like, did, like, a girls' night. And they just came home and drank some soda and hung out. Then they heard Shanda screaming from the car. And this confuses the girls, because they're like, I thought she was dead. So Lori takes a knife from the kitchen, and she goes back to her car, opens the trunk, and stabs Shanda multiple times. She then goes back inside, cleans up again, and the girls sit around, and Lori tells them their futures using her crystals until 2:30 a.m. Okay, first off, I just want to say, what the fuck? Second off, I want to say, what the fuck is Tony doing? She's not doing nothing. She's in the car. She's not... Okay, sure. She's not torturing the Shanda, the poor girl. But she's not getting help either. She's just sitting there. Like, what the fuck is wrong with her? And again, like, how are they so calm after doing this? Like, they just go back and, like, hang out, like, having a sleepover. And third of all, I want to know, like, where are their parents? Because, like, I'd be like, where's my 15-year-old daughter? And it's, like, 2:30 in the morning. Why is she not at home? Again, they heard Shanda from the car. So this time, Hope and Tony stayed at Lori's house while Lori and Melinda decided to go out for a drive with Shanda in the back. And each time they heard her moan or, like, you know, like, have a little cry of anything, like any sound coming from Shanda, they would pull over and beat her with a tire iron. And this on for hours. Like the girls literally drove around the same couple of blocks around the neighborhood and pulled over each time beating her. And at one point, when they opened the trunk, Shanda actually sat up. Her eyes were rolled back. She couldn't speak anymore. And, like, she just kind of, like, made, like, a sound. Like, you can hear her trying to speak, but she couldn't get any words out. And they just beat her some more until she went silent. And then Lori goes up to Melinda and tells her to smell the tire iron that's now covered in blood and everything after beating Shanda. And again, I want to say, Hope and Tony are at Lori's house. First off, the other two girls are gone, torturing this girl. What the fuck is Tony and Hope doing? Why didn't they leave her house? Like, it's so awkward being, why are you in somebody's house when they're not even home? First of all. Second of all, the two of them could have literally left and got help and told somebody what was happening. And third of all, they could have just completely left and was like, yeah, fuck this shit, I'm out. Like, I'm gonna go get help now, right? Like, I don't understand. I just don't understand. So again, this went on for hours, okay? It started at like 2:30 when they decided to go for this quote-unquote drive. And the girls, when they returned to Lori's house and cleaned themselves up, Hope asked about Shanda and Lori laughed. Like, she physically just sat there and laughed and explained to them what they did to her. Like, she was explaining to them in detail while laughing about the torture that they just put this girl through. And this conversation actually ends up waking up Lori's mother, who is furious, first of all, because she's like, why do you have friends over so early in the morning? At 7 a.m. from 2:30 to 7, they were driving around the neighborhood beating this girl. I gotta say, Shanda's a fighter. She is a fighter to endure all of this and still trying to stay alive. Lori's mother tells her daughter to drive her friends home and that why are they still there, right? Like, it's 7 a.m. Like, are their parents not worried? Like, what are you girls doing? So the girls get into the car and they drive to an area, open the trunk, and Melinda, Hope, and Lori stare at Shanda's body. Well, Tony refuses. Like, she refuses to look, right? And Hope then takes a Windex bottle and sprays Shanda with it all over her open wounds. So that must be burning, first of all, because Windex has so much chemicals. And she's saying to her, you're not so hot now, are you? And she's just spraying her. The girls then go to a gas station where they fill up the car and bought a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi. And they pour out the Pepsi, which is a waste, first of all. At least drink it. And they filled it up with gasoline instead. Then they drove out to a gravel road where on one side, it's like a small path. So like on one side, it's like a green field, right? Like just a grassy field. But on the other side is like woods, like forest. So it's just this little path that like divides it basically. And this area was actually really well known to Hope. And while Tony stayed in the car again, Lori and Hope then wrapped Shanda's body in a red blanket and took her to a grass field. Lori then tells Hope to pour some of the gasoline over Shanda, and they set her on fire alive. And you know what the three of them did? They watched her burn. Yeah, yeah. They tortured her all night after kidnapping her from her house, basically, because Shanda did not know any of them, and except for Melinda, but she was in the car. And they lured her out, like they lied to her, lured her out, tortured her all night, and then burned her alive. Then they all get back into the car and they drive away. But then Melinda was scared that they did all this and maybe she's still alive. They're like, oh my god, maybe she's still alive. So they go back. Melinda pours the rest of the gasoline on her and set her on fire again. So while Shanda was being burned alive, her arms actually went straight up. And this happens a lot with people who are burned. Not sure why, but I think it's like, it's just like a reflex kind of thing. She was still breathing this whole time that she was being burned alive. But she was breathing in all of the smoke. And that's how she succumbed to her injuries. This poor 12-year-old girl thought that she was going to go see Amanda. That they were going to take her to Amanda. That's what she thought when she got into this car. And she endured a whole night of torture. And then being burned alive. Burned twice. At 9:30 a.m. that morning, the girls went to a McDonald's where they sat in a booth and had breakfast. One of the girls held up one of their breakfast sausages and joked around saying that it looked like Shanda's burnt body. What the fuck is wrong with them? Tony then calls up a friend and tells them about the murder. Her friend doesn't believe her. First off, so you can call your friend. So that means you had a phone on you, first of all. Because you're at a McDonald's, like, you had a phone on you. And you call your friend and tell them about the murder. But you didn't call for help? What the fuck? You just sat in the car the whole time and let it happen? What a piece of shit. After breakfast, Lori then drops off Tony and Hope at their homes. But Lori and Melinda return to Lori's house where they called Amanda and told Amanda what happened. Amanda didn't believe them. So a friend of Melinda's named Crystal actually came over to Melinda's house later that day. And the three of them went to go pick up Amanda. They all go back to Melinda's where she and Lori tell the whole story to Amanda and Crystal, who still didn't believe them because they're like, what the fuck? There's no way this happened, right? Like, Amanda's like, why would Shanda go with you? She doesn't even, you know, like, you don't like her. And, like, you guys were never friends. She doesn't even know any of your friends. Why would she do that? And because she didn't believe them, Lori opens the trunk of her car and Amanda and Crystal see the bloody trunk, and on the side of the trunk were Shanda's handprints where she was struggling, right? Like, you could tell, like, it was just, like, her bloody handprints because she was struggling in the car. And horrified, Amanda asked to go home. So they get to Amanda's. Melinda kisses Amanda and tells her that she loves her and promised not to tell anybody. Okay, so Melinda is a piece of shit. They're all a piece of shit, actually. Okay? They're all fucked up. Very, very fucked up. But what the fuck? You're gonna tell her all this and not tell anybody, but yet you're going around telling other people and you're the one who committed this crime. What the fuck? I don't understand. On the morning of January 11th, 1992, two brothers were driving towards Jefferson Proving Ground to go hunting when they noticed a body on the side of the road. At first, the two thought it was a mannequin that was thrown away and didn't burn well, but going closer to it, one of them actually poked it with a stick and realized it was a human body. They called the authorities at 10:55 a.m. Jefferson County Sheriff Buck Shipley and his detectives began the investigation. At first, they suspected it was a drug deal gone wrong. And they honestly didn't think that any of the locals in this county would be able to do such a terrible crime. At 1:45 p.m., Stephen, Shanda's father, couldn't find his daughter anywhere. He had called neighbors and friends asking if they'd seen her. Like, all morning, he was, like, looking for her. He even drove around the neighborhood trying to look for her. And when he couldn't find her, that's when he made the call. He then called Jacqueline, but again, nothing. She had heard nothing. So Jacqueline drives up to Stephen's house, where they filed a missing persons report in Clark County at 8:20 p.m. 8:20 p.m., okay? Hope and Tony arrive at the Jefferson County Sheriff's Station with their parents, and the two of them are just bawling their eyes out at this point, and they're rambling on about a murder and the events of what happened that night. The police take the two girls into questioning to get the full information. They also looked into the missing person reports in Jefferson County, but nothing came up. When they questioned Tony, she told them about Shanda. She told them how Shanda lived 50 miles away from Clark County. So the sheriff calls up Clark County and was like, hey, was there anyone, like, missing? Like, was there any missing persons reports, like, you know, within the last 24 hours? And the sheriff at Clark County was like, oh, yeah, we did get one, but I can't confirm right now if it was Shanda or not because they had to do a DNA test. But because she was so badly burnt that the only way to get a DNA test done was through dental records. And when doing the autopsy and dental records, they actually were a match and they could confirm that it was Shanda. The sheriff at Jefferson County and his team then drove to Stephen's house to break the terrible news. At the time, Jacqueline didn't want to hear the details about what happened after hearing that her daughter was dead, right? Like, she couldn't bear hearing the details at that moment. So Stephen was like, okay, just tell me for now, right? Like, so they pulled him aside and told him the whole thing. The next day, while watching the news, Jacqueline saw the news story, and that's how she found out all the details. Like, that is terrible. Imagine, like, you were not ready to hear the horrific news, first of all, terrible news, or the details, and then you find out about it on the news, like, not even in person. Like, I know she could have, but, like, she was not ready. And I totally get that, because if anything like that happened, I would not want to hear anything at that moment. Like, I would probably want to scream and punch somebody or something. The police had all four girls arrested and they were all tried as adults, although they all pled guilty to avoid the death sentence. Tony pleaded guilty to a criminal confinement and she was sentenced to a maximum of 20 years, but only served 9. She was released in 2000. Yeah, you heard me. She only served 9 years. This piece of shit only served 9 years for not speaking up. She could have saved her at any given point because she was the only one in the car. And she didn't do anything. Hope was sentenced to 60 years, but 10 years was taken off for mitigating factors. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. Because she was abused and that she self-harmed as a child, they took off 10 years. Which I don't understand how that plays in with what she did. Because, like, okay, that's her issue that she self-harmed. Nobody told her to self-harm. Like, yeah, okay, I get it. You suffer from depression and, like, whatever. But does that give you a right to hurt somebody? No. She appealed and got it down to 35 years, but only served 14 years before being released in 2006. Yeah, she was released too. This girl who sprayed the Windex and held her down and all that shit. Lori pleaded guilty only to avoid the death penalty in She was sentenced to 60 years, but she was released in January 2018 and after serving only 26 years. After stabbing the girl and beating her with a tire iron and being the driver of, all of this, she only got that. What the fuck? Melinda pleaded guilty to also avoid the death penalty, but she was released in September of 2019 after serving 27 years. Yeah, they're all free. All these bitches are free after killing somebody. After killing a child. While in prison, Melinda actually helped train dogs for the company called ICAN, Indiana Canine Assistance Network, which is a program that helped train dogs to help those with disabilities. And she was doing really well with this company. So in 2012, Shanda's mom, Jacqueline, actually adopted a dog under Shanda's name and named the dog Angel. Okay. And she let Melinda train it. And yeah, she's had a lot of people criticizing her choices because of it. Because she's like, what the fuck? Like, she killed your daughter and now you're gonna be okay with her training this dog kind of thing. But Jacqueline said, if you don't let good things come from bad things, nothing gets better. Okay, listen. Jacqueline sounds like, she sounds like somebody that, like, I can't even put to words, but I'm just gonna say, I give her props to being able to face the person who killed her daughter. Because even though Melinda was a child, okay, she was 16, okay, and she did terrible things, horrific things, I would not be able to see that person ever again without wanting to punch them in the face. In 2005, Stephen became an alcoholic as he couldn't cope from the loss of his daughter and eventually died of alcohol and depression. Jacqueline stated he did everything he could to kill himself besides putting a gun to his head. That man drank himself to death and died of a broken heart. In 2009, the Shanda Sharer Fund was launched to help put two students through school every single year on a scholarship. But as of 2018, the charity stopped running. I'm not really sure why it stopped running, but hey, for those 9 years, that's great. Sending two kids to school every year, that's amazing. And again, props to Jacqueline for putting up with Melinda after everything that's happened and letting her train her puppy to help others with disabilities and stuff. I don't know. Man, Melinda's last name really, really matches her. Melinda Loveless. Yeah. Clearly she was loveless because she killed a 12-year-old. I don't know how all four of these girls are free, but they are. And that is so frustrating to me. Like, I cannot wrap my head around that. And Tony, oh my God. This girl had so many opportunities. She had a fucking phone. She had so many opportunities to call for help. First of all, she was the only one in the car. She could have just taken that car and went. Like, she could have drove off to get help. She could have, so many times, she could have saved Shonda's life. So many. When her and Hope were at Lori's house and Lori and Melinda stepped out, I would have ran out of that house and been like, fuck this shit. I'm going home. I'm telling somebody about this. Like, this girl's gonna die if I don't do anything. But no, she just sat there. And that is so frustrating. And so this is the case of Shanda Sharer. It was a lot. I'm telling you, it was a lot. And there is a book about it. And if you ever find this book, brace yourself. Because everything that I have said, I have put into, like, the lightest that I can of details. Because in this book, it is horrific. Like, it's 100 times worse than what I have just told you. And again, there are documentaries, there are, like, interviews. Like, Dr. Phil did an interview with Melinda Lovelace. Just a whole bunch of stuff based on this, because it was so horrific. That being said, until next time, bye!